Genre, a word only a Frenchman could love. A talk given at the Public Library Association pre-conference on genre in Seattle, February 2004, revised in 2014. The concept of genre is a valid one. We need a method for sorting out and defining varieties of narrative fiction, and genre gives us a tool to begin the job. But there are two big problems in using the tool. The first is that it's been misused so often that it's hard to use it rightly, like a good screwdriver that's all bent out of shape because some dork tried to pry paving stones apart with it. Genre is a generic word, naturally, for a kind or style, especially of art or literature, says the OED, and more specifically a term for paintings of a certain type and subject matter, scenes and subjects of common life. Now, scenes and subjects of common life nicely covers the subject matter of the realistic novel, the literary equivalent of genre painting. But when the term made its way into literature, it came to mean anything but the realistic and the commonplace. It was, oddly enough, applied to fictions whose subject matter is some degrees removed from common life. Westerns, murder mysteries, spy thrillers, romances, horror stories, fantasies, science fiction, and so on. The subject matter of realism is broader than that of any genre except fantasy, and realism was the preferred mode of 20th-century modernism. By relegating fantasy to kiddie lit or the trash, modernist critics left the field to the realistic novel. Realism was central. The word genre began to imply something less, something inferior, and came to be commonly misused, not as a description, but as a negative value judgment. Most people now understand genre to be an inferior form of fiction, defined by a label, while realistic fictions are simply called novels or literature. So we have an accepted hierarchy of fictional types, with literary fiction, not defined, but consisting almost exclusively of realism, at the top. All other kinds of fiction, the genres, are either listed in rapidly descending order of inferiority or simply tossed into a garbage heap at the bottom. This judgmental system, like all arbitrary hierarchies, promotes ignorance and arrogance. It has seriously deranged the teaching and criticism of fiction for decades, by short-circuiting useful critical description, comparison, and assessment. It condones imbecilities on the order of, if it's science fiction, it can't be good. If it's good, it can't be science fiction. And judgment by genre is particularly silly and pernicious now that the idea of genre itself is breaking down. That's the other problem with our good tool. The screwdriver is melting. The screws are all screwy. Much of the best fiction doesn't fit into the genres anymore, but combines, crosses, miscegenates, transgresses, and reinvents them. 70 years ago, Virginia Woolf questioned the possibility of writing realistic fiction honestly. Many honest writers have given up the attempt. Terms such as magical realism or slipstream are taken from the literatures to which they're suited and slapped hastily across great widening cracks in the conventional structure of narrative. They disguise more than they reveal and are useless as description. Major novelists appear outside any recognized category. Tell me what kind of fiction it is that José Saramago writes. It is not realism. No, it certainly isn't. But it very certainly is literature. The breakdown is occurring even across a major boundary, that between fiction and nonfiction. Jorge Luis Borges said that he considered all prose literature to be fiction. Fiction, for Borges, thus includes history, journalism, biography, memoir, Cervantes' Don Quixote, Pierre Ménard's Don Quixote, the works of Borges, Peter Rabbit, and the Bible. It seems a large category, but it may prove more intellectually practicable than any attempt to salvage useless distinctions. And yet the categories established by genre are not only perpetuated, cemented in by the stereotyped thinking of reviewers, by the ingrained habits and superstitions of publishers, and by the shelving and descriptive practices of booksellers and libraries. They also are, have been, and still are, useful, perhaps necessary, to the appreciation of fiction. If you don't know what kind of book you're reading, and it's not a kind you're used to, you probably need to learn how to read it. You need to learn the genre. Useless and harmful as a value category, genre is a valid descriptive category. It may be most useful historically for defining 20th century works. In the postmodern era, the genres begin to melt and flow. But where definition by genre applies and is applied fairly, it is valuable both to readers and to writers. For example, a writer sets out to write science fiction but isn't familiar with the genre, hasn't read what's been written. This is a fairly common situation, because science fiction is known to sell well, but, being subliterary, is supposed to be not worth study. It's just sci-fi. What's to learn? Plenty. A genre is a genre by virtue of having a field and focus of its own, its appropriate and particular tools and rules and techniques for handling the material, its traditions, and its experienced appreciative readers. Ignorant of all this, our novice is about to reinvent the wheel, the spaceship, the space alien, and the mad scientist with cries of innocent wonder. The cries will not be echoed by the readers. Readers familiar with the genre have met the spaceship, the alien, and the mad scientist before. They know much more about them than the writer does. In the same way, critics who set out to talk about a fantasy novel in ignorance of the history and extensive theory of fantasy literature will make fools of themselves because they don't know how to read the book. They have no contextual information to tell them what its tradition is, where it's coming from, what it's trying to do, what it does. This was liberally proved when the first Harry Potter book came out and literary reviewers ran around shrieking about its incredible originality. This originality was an artifact of the reviewers' blank ignorance of its genres, children's fantasy, and the British boarding school story, plus the fact that they hadn't read a fantasy since they were 8. It was pitiful. It was like watching a TV gourmet chef eat a piece of buttered toast and squeal, "But this is delicious! Unheard of! What genius invented it?" When The Hobbit and its sequels were published, ignorance as a critical qualification was celebrated every time a literary pundit exhibited his sophistication by performing the time-hallowed ceremony of the ritual sneers at Tolkien. Happily, that custom is fast dying out. All in all, we need to rethink genre in order to reform the practices of critics and reviewers and the assumptions of readers, and to bring the description of fiction into some kind of relation to reality. I admit that the temptation to pull a Borges is very strong, to just say, all fiction is genre, and all genre is literature. And I do say it when I lose patience. But what's the use in saying it when you know that you're running your head right against the solid obstruction of category labeling and shelving practice, from the conception of the book, the contract, the cover, to the bookstores and libraries? How can you tell reviewers to stop shoving books into outmoded categories where they don't fit, when the publishers themselves absolutely insist on the category labels? And when many, perhaps most, of the authors would scream bloody murder if they didn't get the genre label and cover and category that keeps their book from getting lost among all the other books in all the other genres. Marketing rules, okay. I have no illusions that intelligence could possibly replace marketing in this or any other matter. Commercial genrefication has its reasons. They are intelligible reasons, though not intelligent ones. Consumerism also rules. If the books aren't categorized, if they aren't shelved by genre, if they don't have a little label saying SF or M or YA, a whole lot of customers and library users will come storming the counter or the desk or the online book dealer shouting, "Where is my fiction fix? I want a fantasy. I can't read all that realistic stuff." I want a mystery. I can't read all that plotless stuff. I want a masterpiece of grim realism. I can't read all that imaginary stuff. I want mindless fluff. I can't read all that literary stuff, etc. Genre addicts want books to be easy the way fast food is easy. They want to go to the big online commercial fiction dealer who knows what they like to read and offers cheap fixes, or go to the library shelf and stick out their hand and get a free fix. Did you ever notice handwritten initials next to the previously published titles on the flyleaf of a series mystery at the library? Sometimes a whole row of them down the leaf. They're so people will know they've read that one already. Looking at the story itself wouldn't tell them anything, since it's exactly like all the other books in that series by that author. This signifies reader addiction. The most harm I can see in it is that it may keep addicts from reading good stuff, though they might not read the good stuff anyway, because they've been scared into thinking that literature can't include anything about horses, spaceships, dragons, dreams, spies, monsters, animals, aliens, or dark, handsome, taciturn men who own large houses in remote bits of England. Fitzwilliam Darcy, they need you. But they've been scared away from Darcy, or never allowed a glimpse of him. Instead, the commercial fiction machine feeds their hunger for story with junk food, commercial, mechanical, formula fiction. Any genre, including realism, can be formalized and made commercial. Genre and formula are two different things, but the assumption that they are the same thing allows the lazy-minded critic and professor to ignore and dismiss all genre literature. A genre label on a book is usually an appeal to a safe but limited audience. Publishers go for safe, and so they like genre labels for high-risk authors. But with low-risk big-name authors, the assumption has been that their literary reputation would be damaged by the admission that one or more of their books belongs to a genre. Some literary novelists have performed amazing contortions to preserve their pure name from the faintest taint of genre pollution. I am tempted to imitate them, backwards. How am I to protect my unspotted name as a sci-fi writer from the scorn of those who may notice that I have shamelessly published realistic fiction? Easy. Consider my book Sea Road, which makes ironic use of some realistic tropes. But of course I don't write re-fi, as its fat fans in three-piece suit costumes call it. Realism is for lazy-minded, semi-educated people whose atrophied imagination allows them to appreciate only the most limited and conventional subject matter. Re-fi is a repetitive genre written by unimaginative hacks who rely on mere mimesis. If they had any self-respect, they'd be writing memoir, but they're too lazy to fact-check. Of course, I never read re-fi, but the kids keep bringing home these garish realistic novels and talking about them, so I know that it's an incredibly narrow genre, completely centered on one species, full of worn-out clichés and predictable situations, the quest for the father, mother-bashing, obsessive male lust, dysfunctional suburban families, etc., etc. All it's good for is being made into mass-market movies. Given its old-fashioned means and limited subject matter, realism is quite incapable of describing the complexity of contemporary experience. There are many bad books. There are no bad genres. Of course, there are genres that are unappealing to individual readers. A reader who liked or valued all kinds of narrative equally would be undiscriminating to the point of imbecility. Some people honestly can't read fantasy with any pleasure. I honestly can't read porn, horror, or most political thrillers with pleasure. I have friends who cannot read any fiction with pleasure. They need what they can consider or pretend to be facts. These differences point, again, to the underlying validity of the concept of literary genre. But they do not justify any judgment of literature by genre. There are commercial subcategories, such as some series mysteries, gross-out books for children concerning snot, and strict formula romances, which are so narrowly prescribed, so rigidly diminished in emotional and intellectual scope, that a genius would go mad trying to write one of serious merit. But if you sneer at romance as an intrinsically inferior fictional category, may I invite you to read the works of Charlotte and Emily Bronte? Judgment of literature by category or genre is worthless. So what are we going to do now? What use is the concept of genre if you can't damn whole categories of fiction with it so that you never have to bother learning how to read them, and if the fiction writers are going to keep crossing over, ignoring boundaries, miscegenating, interbreeding like a barn full of cats, while publishers and booksellers and librarians cling desperately to the old, false, rigid divisions because they're commercially unrisky and they make it easy for people to find certain types of books without being exposed to any alien forms of literature that might possibly take over their minds and put new ideas into them. Perhaps in the almost pathless confusion of the Internet, and in the fact that we now have two major ways of publishing and reading books, the problem of genre has already begun to find its solution.